We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
This is Focus 580, hour number two of our program. My name's David Inge, and we're glad to have you with us. The producers for the show, Harriet Williamson and Martha Deal, and at the controls right now is Henry Frayne. This morning, in this part of Focus 580, we'll be talking about cars, and particularly we'll talk about reliability, because that is the focus of an article in the new issue of Consumer Reports magazine. It's their annual reliability survey. One of the things they do is they ask subscribers about their experiences with their autos, and then they collect that information and they put that together. So maybe if you're thinking about buying a new or late model car and you would say reliability is the most important thing, that might give you some clues, something to think about. But our guest for this hour of the show, Mike Quincy, he's an auto content specialist with Consumer Reports, says he's prepared to talk more generally about cars and about the auto industry. So any and all questions certainly are welcome. You're thinking about bringing a new vehicle into your home, whether that be new or used, and you have some questions about how to approach the thing, what to think about, what to look at. Maybe you have questions about specific cars. Maybe you have some questions about how to work with the dealers and get the best possible deal that you can. We probably take questions on any of all those things. Certainly, I'm sure that our guest will take his best shot at giving an answer. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, and also toll-free 800-222-9455. Well, Mike Quincy, hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, thanks, and yourself?
I'm doing pretty good.
Good. Thanks very much for being with us. We really appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. Anytime.
Just, I guess, to start, maybe we could talk a little bit about reliability and some of the information that you have here in the magazine. And I guess my question would be, well, what do you mean by reliability and how exactly do you measure that?
Sure. Okay. I can do that.
Yeah. So what do you mean by reliability?
Well, in terms of reliability for Consumer Reports, what we do is we survey our nearly 8 million subscribers between the magazine and the website, and we basically ask them, tell us about any major problem that you had with your vehicle over the last 12 months that compromised safety or put the vehicle in a fair amount of downtime, and we take that information and we give it to our very smart statisticians who crunch the numbers and come up with reliability ratings for used cars as well as predicted reliability for new cars.
Mm-hmm. Now, there is a cautionary note here that it doesn't necessarily reliability and performance don't necessarily line up.
Exactly. That's a good point, because a lot of people think, well, if the car really does well in a test, say like the Volkswagen Touareg is absolutely aces in Consumer Reports testing, but according to our subscribers, the reliability of the Touareg is really, really poor. Mm-hmm. So we don't recommend the Touareg because of reliability, but it does do well in our testing.
Okay. So again, it goes back to simply people saying, well, this is the kind of car I have. This is the experience that I have had. I've had these kind of problems, or I have not had any sort of problems. Really, that's what we're talking about.
Exactly. When we publish automotive information, Consumer Reports, we look at how the vehicle did in our testing, how it did in our reliability surveys, and then we also factor in how it did if it was crash tested by the government or the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety. And if it gets passing marks in those three criteria, then it gets the coveted recommended mark.
Yeah. And there, again, maybe people have seen the magazine for a number of years now. Every year there's an issue that rates new cars, and you look at different sorts of things. So I suppose it depends on, as a buyer, what's most important to you. If fuel economy is most important, well, okay, you can look at that. If safety, for example, crash worthiness is most important to you, you can look at that. So if you want to pick out a particular thing, but then also then what you guys there try to do is to take all those factors into consideration, then when you make your suggestions about what you think, based on all of these things, are the best cars in various categories.
I think you make a really good point, because just because we say a car is recommended does not necessarily mean it's right for you. I mean, we might take a car, a mainstream sedan, such as the Nissan Altima, and we might like its handling. We think the performance of the engine is good. The fuel economy is decent. But you have to try it on for size. In other words, if you're 6 foot five, you got to make sure that you fit in the car. You got to make sure that you can read the gauges. You got to make sure that if you're older, if you have a creaky back or bad knees, you can get in and out of the driver's seat. All that comes from a very comprehensive road test when you go to the dealership. And that's what we've always said to people. You know, again, don't take our word for it. Go try it and make sure that it's right for you.
Mm. And here, sort of another bottom line the findings here is that price and reliability also don't line up. So you shouldn't expect that necessarily if you buy a very expensive vehicle. That doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be a more reliable vehicle.
I think that's important. That, as we covered in the December issue of Consumer Reports, even, you know, with all this great new reliability information that we have, you don't have to spend a lot of money to get a reliable car. I mean, 20 of the 37 small cars that we found to have above average predictive reliability include very affordable, good performing models such as the Honda Fit, the Scion XD, the Volkswagen Golf. These are cars that deliver very good performance, excellent fuel economy, and will not break the bank. I think a lot of people in today's economy are concerned about getting into a 4 or 5 year car loan and a big payment, and these cars will deliver lots for the money and without having to stretch your budget.
It does seem to be the case that once again that if you look at the cars that are considered to be most reliable, that as is the case with I think your recommendations, is that most of them are Japanese nameplates. Now, I guess that we though get back to questions about, well, where actually is the car built? But
sure.
It continues to be cars like Toyotas and Hondas so forth. Although you also find that among American manufacturers, that Ford does pretty well when it comes to reliability.
Well, while the Japanese generally do dominate Consumer Reports' best reliability list, the good news out of Detroit is that Ford really is the reliability champion for the domestics. In Consumer Reports' reliability survey, we found that 90% of Ford products have average or better reliability. And I think that the most important takeaway from this statistic is that it's not a flash in the pan. I mean, it's one thing if a manufacturer tweaks a car and it does okay in Consumer Reports reliability, but then falls off the next year, you kind of think, well, I can't trust that. But really, for about 3 years straight now, Ford has absolutely impressed us with its almost Japanese-like reliability. We found that the four-cylinder Ford Fusion and Mercury Milan, they actually are ranking higher than some of the best models from Japan, including the Honda Accord and the Toyota Camry. The Ford Focus is more reliable than a Corolla. I think, you know, growing up in the 70s and 80s, coming into my own car consciousness, I never thought I would hear the day when a Toyota Corolla wasn't beating the tar out of a car from Detroit.
Sure, that's pretty amazing. I think as far as you were concerned, and a lot of other people were concerned, that for a long, long time, the Corolla was the all-around best family sedan kind of car.
Yeah, more on the economy car side. I mean, the Camry is...
Or maybe, the Camry.
The Camry is the Corolla's sort of big brother.
Yeah.
And while the Camry still does very well in Consumer Reports tests, good fuel economy, good reliability, the Ford Fusion four-cylinder model is actually more reliable than the Camry. And again, did you ever think you would see the day when that would come true.
Yeah. We have some callers here, and again, let me just very quickly introduce the guest. We're talking with Mike Quincy. He is auto content specialist with Consumer Reports, and we're talking a little bit about what you can find in the December issue of the magazine. It's their reliability survey. So if you have kind of questions like about that, you can call in. But other sorts of questions about cars and about the car business and about Consumer Reports, what the folks there, based on their testing, think are good cars, you can call us, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. And we'll talk with someone in Leroy first on our toll-free line, line four. Hello.
Oh, good morning, I
yeah.
suppose. Uh-huh. Well, two things. The Mitsubishi vehicles manufactured right here in Illinois, over in Bloomington, stand up pretty well in the J.D. Power survey. And then my question would be, in terms of German vehicles, the Volkswagen TDI, the diesel line, do you have any information on the reliability there? And I'll hang up and drive and listen.
All right. Thank you. Drive carefully now, please.
That's always important, right? Yes, we actually do have information on the new Volkswagen turbo diesels. They have come in to be at least average in reliability in Consumer Reports reliability survey, which is a good thing because we really like the diesels. We found that they get phenomenal fuel economy. I mean, you get on the highway and the gas gauge just doesn't move. We got 47 miles per gallon on the highway in our last Jetta diesel, and we're happy to recommend it because its reliability has, in fact, improved.
That's, you know, I guess, and I think we've talked about this before, and people ask this question, you know, given they look at Europe and they look at the availability, popularity of diesels, and they say, what? Why is it that here in the United States it seems that's for passenger vehicles? Now, you know, in big trucks, yeah, probably you always have been able to buy a Mercedes, I guess, that was a diesel, and there have been some Volkswagens offered as diesels, but has never been much of a choice for Americans who are interested in passenger vehicles. And why is that?
You know, which is really true, too bad, because today's diesels are so much better than they used to. I mean, forget about what you thought about diesels in the 70s and early 80s, them being slow, smelly, really noisy, all kinds of vibrations from the engine coming in through into the interior. Today's diesels are quieter, smoother. They're much, much cleaner. They've had to abide by tighter emission standards to be sold in all 50 states, and why is the price of diesel fuel more than in some cases premium level gasoline? I don't have a quick answer to that, except that I guess the refining process is different, the demand isn't there, but there are still a handful of really good diesels that are available in the U.S., and I think if the price of diesel comes closer in line to regular fuel, I could see more and more manufacturers bringing their very successful diesels that they sell in Europe.
And just to get at the other question the caller asked, anything in particular you want to say about Mitsubishis?
Mitsubishis generally are fairly reliable. They're sort of middle of the road performers in Consumer Reports tests. They haven't spent a lot of money updating their product line. The Mitsubishi Endeavor, for example, SUV hasn't been touched really since it debuted in 2004. The Lancer small sedan is okay. The Galant midsize sedan is okay. The Eclipse Sport Coupe is just kind of okay. The one model that we do recommend from Mitsubishi is the Outlander. This is a smaller SUV. Did very well in Consumer Reports test, above average reliability, good fuel economy, about 22 miles per gallon overall. Not bad for its class. So Mitsubishi is kind of a fringe player in the broad automotive marketplace. They don't have the product line to rival some of the best from Japan or even the United States, although the products that they make have had moments of decent reliability.
On again to Urbana for the next caller, line one. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I can tell you part of the reason why this isn't why I call, but I can tell you part of the reason why I think, anyway, diesels haven't caught on, and having driven a tractor-trailer truck for many years, they're more maintenance intensive, for one thing, and secondly, climate has a bad effect on them. The colder it gets, diesel fuel, one of the reasons why diesel fuel is more expensive is the fact that it has more heat energy in it, it has more paraffin in it. So if it gets doesn't have to be all that cold, really, you know, about 10 above zero, so the fuel literally turns into gelatin and it won't flow. And so one of the problems with diesels has always been that they're fine if you live in Texas or Arizona, in someplace warm and arid with great distances between points. But here in the upper Midwest, they're just sort of impractical for that reason, the winter drivability reason.
Hmm. Maybe one of the reasons why a lot of the diesel models are available with a engine block heater.
Yeah, but which doesn't do anything for the fuel because when it gets very, very cold, you have to either add additives or blend the fuel, and it's a nuisance. But the thing I wanted to call about, and our local mechanic here, Brick Karch, who comes on every now and then, I've been wanting to ask him for a long time, have you ever surveyed mechanics or independent shop owners to see which vehicles, when they roll in, if they see them at all, when they roll in for repair, they think, oh, well, what a pleasure. Oh, this will be easy. And as an example, some years ago, a friend of mine who had a Toyota, her thermostat failed. It was opening too soon. So I volunteered to fix it for her. And I was just absolutely impressed how it took me 20 minutes, start to finish. One bolt, drain the radiator, one bolt to take the thermostat out, put it back in, fill it back up. It was just a breeze to do. Have you ever heard of or talked to mechanics or professionals or even people who work in the dealers who have an opinion that, oh, yes, this is a very easy car to maintain. When it does require work, it's very easy to work on. It seems to be well-engineered and so on and so forth. I wonder if you could address that point. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Thanks for the call. Actually, what we've had, we have a full staff of mechanics here at our Consumer Reports test track in Connecticut who work on the cars. And one of the ways that we measure fuel economy is that we splice a fuel meter right into the fuel line. So we measure every drop of fuel that's used, and that's how we get such accurate fuel economy readings. And you can, you just need to talk to them about when we talk about setting up for fuel economy. They talk about fuel rigging the vehicle, and that's how they have to work to put in the fuel meter to do the measurements. And when they have to do, for example, an Audi, a Volkswagen, a Mercedes-Benz, BMW, they just say, oh my gosh, what a headache. So definitely there are vehicles that are much harder to work on. Consumer Reports Reliability Survey does not necessarily go to the mechanics to survey them to find out what vehicles are tough. But certainly if you're an independent shop, you know which vehicles are headaches and which ones are easy.
Yeah, I suppose that if you have a relationship with an independent mechanic like that, maybe not be such a bad idea when you're thinking about buying a new vehicle is to ask them.
I think that's a good point, because part of the buying decision process should be is what is this car going to be like down the road. In other words, Consumer Reports has this rating called an owner cost, where we look at 5 or 10 years down the road about how much it costs to own the vehicle, and that's definitely a consideration. For example, a model that we really like, the Toyota Sienna all-wheel drive minivan, comes with standard run flat tires, and what this does is it opens up some trunk space, makes the car lighter because you're not carrying around a spare tire. However, a lot of the run flat tires don't last that long, and they're really expensive to replace. So again, that's part of the decision making process.
So this term is new to me. Does that mean it's a tire you can drive on if it's flat?
Exactly. That if you lose air in a run flat tire, the sidewalls are stiff enough to support the wheel and the weight of the cars at no more than 50 miles an hour.
Oh,
and over a certain number of miles. In other words, you can drive a run flat tire when it's flat, but you wouldn't want to drive cross country to it. It's enough miles to get you to a tire store or a filling station or something like that, so you can get some help. But yeah, they have a number of performance cars have run flat tires. They have their strengths and their weaknesses, but one of the weaknesses definitely is replacement cost.
Okay, on to another caller here, and this would be in Champaign, line two. Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
Okay, so does your Reliability magazine or issue go through used car? I'm thinking we're going to buy a car, but we don't usually buy new, and we want something that's going to be reliable, especially in colder weather, because we're actually moving away from this area and going up to colder weather. So we want to look for something that's going to be reliable, but isn't brand new off the factory floor. So does it go into any of that, and can you provide any insight into what some of those cars might, what make and models they might be?
Oh, wow. Okay. Colder than Champaign, Illinois?
Yes. Yeah.
Wow. are you going to Alaska?
Oh, it's not that bad.
Yeah, actually, we're below the snow belt here.
Consumer Reports just tested snowshoes. You're in luck. No, I'm just kidding. the models that you should consider probably will be from the major, mainstream car companies. For example, you definitely look at cars from Honda, from Toyota, from Subaru, For example, these are cars that have had great reliability in Consumer Reports survey. I would look at a Honda Accord. I would look at a Toyota Camry. I would look at a Nissan Altima. These are models that stand up well over time, have done well in Consumer Reports tests, and you know some of them even come with seat heaters.
Okay.
Which is a really great feature. I now have a car for the first time ever. We have this car that we actually also bought used that has heated seats. And from now on, I'm sorry, I'm getting old now.
I have to have heated seats. Used, so that's not a brand new kind of feature then? So that's
Seat heaters have been around for a long time. So if you choose a higher end model, for example, if you chose a Toyota Camry XLE trim line or a Honda Accord EX, a lot of those models come standard with heated seats.
Okay, and they're good in driving around in snow as well? Do they have four-wheel drive options? Or
Some of them have four-wheel drive options. What I would, though, instead focus on is getting get a front-wheel drive model because most of the time there isn't snow and ice on the ground, you know, throughout all the months of wherever.
Right, okay.
Even in Alaska, they have dry months. Get a good pair of snow tires. The November issue of Consumer Reports and online consumerreports.org has all these new tire tests. And a good pair of winter tires with a front-wheel drive car will actually do you better than a model that has all-wheel drive with performance tires.
Okay,
tires are as much of are just as equally important, or even more important than getting all-wheel drive.
Okay, well, I'm glad I called because I would not have known that. I would thank you so much. Enjoying the show.
All right, thank you. And just maybe we mentioned too that the annual auto issue, the one that comes out in April, where you rate new cars, does have information on used cars. So it includes your best bets for used cars as well.
That's absolutely true, and all of the used car information and reliability data are online at consumerreports.org. We also have a new special publication that just came out called Best and Worst New Cars. It should be on newsstands now. And that also has reliability charts going back to the 2000 model year. So you can, say, look up the Mercedes-Benz C-Class and pick which model years make the best used cars, because we have data showing you which ones to choose and which ones to avoid.
Yeah. Our guest is Mike Quincy. He's auto content specialist with Consumer Reports, and certainly as you're doing your research, if you're thinking about buying a car, whether new or lightly used, that's one place you can go to get information. So questions are welcome, 333-9455 and toll-free, 800-222-9455. And next we'll talk with someone in Villa Grove, line 3. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
You kind of already answered where I can look up this information, but I was just wondering, last time I called in and talked to you guys about it, I asked about the gas mileage and which one's the best on that, and the Rave was the Prius at that point in time, I believe.
Correct.
So I was just calling to see if that's changed any.
Well, we're also, if it's fuel economy is the one and only, I'd also look at the Honda Insight. That is another small hybrid model, came out this year from Honda. It didn't do as well in the Prius in our testing because we found the handling not as good. The cabin was noisy. It wasn't as engaging to drive as the Prius, but still stellar fuel economy. But I would still choose the Prius over the Insight, or as we mentioned before, check out the Volkswagen's new turbo diesels in the Jetta and the Golf. Those are also excellent for fuel economy.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Very good. Thank you. And next we'll talk with a caller in Champaign in line 1. Hello.
Hi. I have a question about the BMW 328i. We've always had Honda Accords, and the BMW is great to drive, but I'm wondering what can you tell us to expect in terms of reliability? It's a 2008 model. And, you know, what can we expect in, you know, in the years 8, 9, and 10 if we get there?
Sure. The BMW 3 Series is one of Consumer Reports' all-time favorites. I love the 3 Series. It's one of the last of the great BMWs that isn't totally crazy with the controls. The steering is absolutely fabulous. The engines are great. Love the 3 Series. And the good news is that the 2008 model is looking very good in Consumer Reports reliability surveys. In fact, as a used car, it's above average in terms of reliability. Owner cost is about average over time. BMWs have never been known to be absolutely cheap. In fact, in the 80s, I think the joke was that BMW stood for Break My Wallet, which, you know, tends to give people pause when after the warranty is over and they got to bring their car in for service. So you have to keep that in mind. That's part of the decision-making process, how much these cars cost. BMW usually has a very generous initial warranties, like I think 4 or 5 years of everything covered, even wear items, which is quite attractive. But then after that, the cost might get a little bit more steep. But it is so easy to recommend a BMW 3 Series. It's a car that I would drive every day of my life with pleasure.
That's what I was worried about, year 4 or year 5, whenever that warranty goes out. You know, what do those years look like?
So I think it's fair to go to the dealer and say, okay, you know, my 3 Series is out of warranty. I need to bring it in for service. Give me an average, you know, price of you know, a 50 when the car's at 60,000 miles or whatever. How much is it going to cost? And I think they have those prices in mind. They have a general idea of how much it's going to cost. So, but I can't quote you a number, but the dealership probably could.
And what do you think of the Toyota RAV4, their new design?
Love the RAV4. RAV4, year in and year out, is one of the top-rated small SUVs in Consumer Reports tests. The V6 model especially is really slick. It has a nice interior, great performance, good reliability, excellent fuel economy, about 23 miles per gallon overall, which is very good for the class of vehicle, a car that you could drive year in and year out and not even really worry about it at all. I mean, absolute aces in Consumer Reports reliability.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye.
And again, we'll go to, let's see, next caller here is also Champagne, and this is line number 2. Hello.
Hey, good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I just recently purchased a Grand Touring Mazda 3, and I just wanted to get your opinion, because I was looking at the Corolla, and I know that the Corolla obviously is a better gas mileage, you know, repair, all that history, but I just want to get your opinion on the Mazda 3 as compared to some of those other cars that you were talking to about earlier.
Sure. The Mazda 3 is very competitive, and I think what you might give up with the Mazda 3 compared to the Corolla in terms of fuel economy or top-notch reliability, what you're getting with the Mazda 3 is a more engaging car. It's fun to drive, great steering. The 2.5-liter engine is really punchy. The handling is precise, very responsive. I find the Mazda 3 a lot more entertaining on a day-to-day basis than the Corolla. I think you buy a Mazda 3 when you like to drive more. I think you buy a Corolla if you just need a car sort of as an appliance. It's going to get me from point A to point B, and I really don't want to think about it that much. But Consumer Reports has always loved the Mazda 3. The latest version is still excellent. It scores, you know, very high in its class.
Okay. One other question. I noticed that the Grand Touring is not a very popular model. Can you speak to why you think that is?
I think just because the Grand Touring is near the top of the trimline range. In other words, the entry level model is the iSV. And the top level is the Mazda Speed 3. And the Grand Touring is just under the Mazda Speed 3 in terms of pricing structure. So that's probably one of the reasons why you might not see as many Grand Touring trim lines around. But, I like the Grand Touring because it's just that much nicer. The interior trim is nicer. The seats are a bit nicer. You get all of the bells and whistles with the Grand Touring, and it's an excellent version.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thank you. We're a little bit past our midpoint here. Our guest is Mike Quincy. He's auto content specialist with Consumer Reports, and that is a good place for you to look for information about cars, either in the magazine or online. And as you're doing your research, you're trying to decide what's the best car for you. Well, there's a lot of good information there in Consumer Reports about cars and how they rate on things like crashworthiness and mileage and overall reliability, and there's also information there about when you go into the dealership, what you want to try to do to get the best deal. And so it's a good thing to look at if you're in the market for a car. And questions are welcome too. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. We'll keep on talking with folks here. We'll next go to Monunk in Woodford County, line 4, right here. Hello.
Hello.
Yeah.
Do you know much about the Chevy Malibu? I have an 07, which at about 41,000, it gave me trouble in the power steering. They had to replace a module, I believe it was, or something electrical in there, and it was rather expensive, although the company did stand it in this case. But what do you think of that?
Would I probably have
problems again in another 40,000 if I keep the car?
It is possible, according to Consumer Reports Reliability Survey, the Malibu had a few, the 2007 Malibu had a few problems with the suspension, the braking system, the body integrity. It's about average in terms of a used car buy, in terms of reliability. But the next year, the 2008, it was when the Malibu was redesigned, and we think the redesigned model is much better than the previous version. The interior is nicer, the handling is better, the braking is better, the fuel economy is better. So if the car is holding together and it's not costing you an arm and a leg month in and month out, keep driving it. But if you're constantly bringing it in to get things fixed, then it might just be a black hole and you're just pouring money down the drain. So if you like Chevy, if you like sticking with Malibus, the new Malibu is recommended by Consumer Reports.
Well, this car is, I think, an excellent car except for that power steering problem. And I've heard that there are a few other people had similar problems, and I just wonder if that's a common thing. But economy-wise, it's excellent.
Yep. No, it's a good model. The Malibu is certainly an indication that General Motors is getting back to basics, getting back to building better cars, and possibly on the road to recovery.
You never heard this power steering problem?
I have not particularly heard it, and I don't have any data that shows it. But it certainly is possible. If you go online and you Google Malibu power steering problems, I'll bet you'll find all kinds of hits on it.
Well, I would have thought there'd been a recall because that mine started veering off to the left when it gave trouble, which could be a danger, of course.
Oh, sure, definitely. Got to get that looked
back, actually, but I could tell there's something wrong in the steering, so that's what I was wondering.
Okay. Well, I thank you for the call. Can I ask you, Mike, just a quick question here and we'll get some more calls. I remember when when Toyota introduced the hybrid car.
The Prius.
The Prius. And a lot of people were really jazzed about it. And people were just lining up and people were actually even willing to pay a premium. And I think at the time that was the only hybrid. That was the first hybrid. It's a gas electric hybrid became available. Now we have more hybrids, but I think at the time, maybe some people were saying, well, this is kind of a new technology. We're not exactly sure how this is going to work out. Is it going to have problems? Is this car going to be good over the long haul? And now it's still around, and also we have a number of other manufacturers that are offering hybrids, and I guess I'm just wondering what you can say about the hybrid idea, the hybrid technology, and how that has proven now over a number of years.
Well, according to Consumer Reports data, 5 of the 8 most reliable family cars are in fact hybrids, including the Toyota Prius, the Ford Fusion Hybrid, the Mercury Milan Hybrid, the Nissan Altima Hybrid, and the Toyota Camry Hybrid. So I think that, looking back in all the years of data that we have, certainly on the Toyota Prius, looking back to the 2001 model year when the first Prius debuted, it is showing incredibly good reliability. I would go in to buying a hybrid model with a fair amount of confidence because I think this technology so far is holding up quite well, and not only is it reliable, but the fuel economy is tough to beat. You're talking about 43-44 miles per gallon overall, so rest easy, hybrid owners, because according to our data, you're not buying it into a nightmare. It's not like buying an old Alfa Romeo or a Fiat where it took you to the poor farm every time you had to get something fixed.
What about I think a lot of people had this question about the batteries and how long they were good for and when they would need to be replaced and the fact that's a pretty expensive item when you do.
According to the manufacturers, they've told us that the hybrid batteries are designed to last the lifetime of the car, and you have to imagine air quotations that my fingers are doing right now over the radio. But if a battery fails, it can be expensive to maintain. However, I think the car companies realize this, and they have fairly generous warranties on the battery. But you should definitely read the owner's manual, the warranty information, to make sure you know what you're getting into. Consumer Reports data does not show a lot of battery failure. So with that in mind, I would, you know, go into buying a hybrid with a fair amount of confidence.
Okay. Back to the phones. Next is someone in Champaign and line one. Hello.
Hi. I have a Prius that isn't what I called about, but just it's 5 years old, and I've had to replace the regular battery, but the warranty on the power battery is 8 years.
Okay.
So it's still doing fine, but in the winter around town, I only get about 30 miles per gallon because of the heater and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And in the colder weather, the batteries aren't going to recharge as well. It's not going to retain the power as well. We've heard that from lots and lots of Consumer Reports subscribers that their fuel economy definitely goes down in the colder months.
Yeah. On the highway, in warm weather, I can average 50. Even though they say it's better in the city, they lie.
Oh, yeah. According to Consumer Reports test also, we got much better fuel economy on the highway with the hybrids than in the city.
Yeah, I mean, the raw material says it's better in the city because you brake, but you're forever accelerating, and then you're doing, you know, 2 miles per gallon or whatever while you're accelerating, and then when you finally get up to speed, that's where you get the good fuel economy.
Sure.
But anyway, I have a family member who's buying a used car for hilly and cold Pennsylvania south of Pittsburgh. So you mentioned a specific reference that's coming out now. So could you give me that again? I wasn't listening carefully enough.
I'm sorry, coming out now?
Well, I think she was you were talking earlier about tires being very important and an issue coming up where you're going to rate tires. And I think you said if you think you're going to be driving in ice and snow, it's important that you have, you'd say, buy a car with front-wheel drive, and having four-wheel drive is not as important as having good tires.
Yes, that's absolutely true. The November issue of Consumer Reports, which is last month's issue, has a full tire test, but also all that information is on our website, which is consumerreports.org, and especially when you're buying a used car, you really have no idea the condition of the tires. So it's one of the components you're likely going to have to replace sooner rather than later, as opposed to a new car where the tires obviously are brand new. So any used car that you're thinking about buying, I would go to consumerreports.org and look up the best tires for that model. Being in Pennsylvania, where you're going to get a fair amount of snow.
Yeah, so there's not a specific reference for used cars. You just go to the website?
Well, no. The Consumer Reports website has lists of best and worst used cars rated by reliability. But some of the models that I mentioned from the previous caller include, you know, a lot of the stalwarts in the family sedan category: the Toyota Camry, the Honda Accord, the Nissan Altima, the Subaru Legacy, the Ford Fusion. These are cars that have done well in Consumer Reports tests and have an excellent reliability record.
Hey, is that a free part of the site, or do you have to pay for that?
There's a little bit of both. There's some information that's free, and some of it you do have to pay for, because Consumer Reports is a nonprofit organization. We don't take advertising. We don't take money from the government. So when we do, we buy all the products that we test. And,
right.
And you know, really, for people to get the meat of our information, we do ask that you sign up to be a subscriber.
Yeah, you're preaching to the choir here, but I just know for these lists of best used cars and best and worst used cars, is that a free site or is that paid, you know?
I believe that's a paid site, but you might be able to go to the library and look it up if you're looking to save a couple bucks.
Okay, thank you.
All right, very good. And on to Piatt County. This is the next caller, someone on line number two. Hello. Yes.
In 2002, I happened to stumble into a Honda CR-V, and it has just been so incredible. But I'm the only one driving it, you know, so I don't really need all that room. But then I moved to the country, so I really need the space in the back. But now it has 163,000 miles on it, and I don't do, you know, I keep it well maintained, and I don't do any long distance driving or anything like that. But can I expect, somebody said, oh, you can get 200,000 miles out of a CR-V, and I thought, do you have any knowledge of, I mean, is there a point where I should be looking for something else? And since I need it for hauling landscaping things, what would be a smaller, reliable vehicle after the CR-V?
I think it is not. It's not unusual for well maintained cars to go 200,000 miles. That's not crazy. The CRV has an excellent reliability history, so I would think that with proper maintenance, the CRV could go at least that. I think the acid test that you have to pass for your car is if every month you're worried that it's not going to start, you're worried that it's going to break down in the middle of the night, you're constantly bringing it in to get something fixed.
Mm-hmm.
Again, if it turns into a black hole where you're constantly putting lots of money into it, and the amount of money that you're putting into it is more than its used car value,
mm-hmm.
then you're kind of upside down on it, and it's probably time to look for something else.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of a small utility vehicle like the CRV, I would also check out the Toyota RAV4, the Subaru Forester. These are kind of smallish SUVs that have done very well in Consumer Reports tests, reasonably fuel economy, excellent reliability. You can't really go wrong with any of those.
Okay, well, thanks so much.
Right,
very good. Okay, and let's talk next with a caller in Urbana and line 3. Hello.
Hi there.
Mm-hmm.
So we are looking to buy a car. We're used car buyers, and we like station wagons. We're not a fan of minivans, but we have a family. I was wondering if you could just do like a quick survey of the early to mid 2000 vintage station wagons, and there's really only a few, so hopefully that's not too broad.
Right, right. Yeah, and you're right. There aren't as many wagons as there used to be. I'm with you on this. I love wagons. I think SUVs tend to kind of go over the top in terms of how big they are, how much fuel they drink, how clumsy they are in some of the handling. So some of the smaller wagons that I would look at of that era would include definitely the Subaru Legacy, the Subaru Outback. These are models that have done very well in Consumer Reports tests, great reliability. I would look at, as we the last caller mentioned, the Honda CRV is a good small wagon. I mean, some people call it an SUV, but it's really more of a wagon size. The Subaru Forester also is a good size. You might consider a Ford Escape. Again, this is a small kind of wagon-like vehicle that isn't huge and imposing like an SUV.
Mm-hmm.
But your choices for this category are pretty limited overall.
What do you think of Volvos? I mean, obviously a new Volvo is a heck of a lot of car to buy, but the used Volvos are affordable. Are they not reliable? Or
We really have sort of – Volvos run hot and cold in terms of reliability. In terms of the like the an XC70, which is a real nice wagon. Some models are better than others. I would look at a 2004, a 2006, for example, according to Consumer Reports reliability data. Those two model years were better than some of the others. The Volvo V50 again has about average reliability for a used model. However, you should check into how much they cost to maintain.
Okay.
Volvo parts and service can be pretty pricey.
Okay.
So before diving into a used Volvo, I would go to a dealer and say, you know, how much would it cost to do a regular service on a 2004 Volvo XC70, for example?
Okay.
You know, what is a 50,000 mile checkup cost?
Right. And then the Passat of this era, I like the way it looks, but it's not how's the reliability on the Volkswagen?
The Volkswagen Passats are awful.
Okay.
Sorry to say that,
yeah.
But they look nice, they drive nice, they've done well in Consumer Reports tests. The past data that we have on Passats is the biggest, darkest circle that you can imagine. I wouldn't put anyone in a used Passat that I cared about.
Okay. So we'll look Subaru. Thank you very much.
All right, and I hate that because I'm driving a 2001 Passat. So,
okay, your producer, by the way, did not tell me to say that.
Yeah, okay. But actually, I do note that it's you seem to think that actually Passats have gotten better because you're now recommending the Passat. Are we talking about a new Passat?
A new Passat, Consumer Reports is recommending. We have enough data on the redesign model to show that it has an average reliability rating. However, I think it's really just on the skin of its teeth average. I think it probably just makes the cut in terms of reliability, which is really too bad. Because because we love the Passat. We love the way it drives. We love the interior. The cabin is quiet. It's comfortable. The suspension is nice. It has a nice balance between ride and handling. We wish that all the Volkswagens had great reliability because they've always done well in our testing.
Okay. On to, let's see, Hoopston, line four. Hello.
Yes, hello. Mm-hmm. I'm in the market for a new minivan, and I'm a courier, and I drive about 80,000 miles a year.
Holy
and
cow.
I'm looking to get something for longevity and fuel economy, one. And two, do they make a hybrid minivan? And I'll listen off the air. Thank you.
Unfortunately, they do not make a hybrid minivan as of right now, which is too bad because I think in some ways it would make a lot of sense. In terms of fuel economy, the vans that get the best fuel economy in Consumer Reports test are the front-wheel drive Toyota Sienna and the Honda Odyssey. I think both of these are excellent choices. Really, the Sienna and the Odyssey are the best minivans. Everybody else is playing catch-up. It's not even close how much better these minivans are than the competition. They got it all over the rest of the minivans in terms of performance, reliability, fuel economy, and you can't go wrong with either. The Sienna, I think, is slightly quieter, a little bit more comfortable. The Odyssey is a bit more engaging to drive, better steering, better handling. Some might even say it's fun to drive, which many people might not say in terms of the same sentence as a minivan. But, again, can't go wrong with the Sienna or the Odyssey, both highly recommended by Consumer Reports.
It seems like a hybrid minivan is kind of like a no-brainer, you know, like it'd be a great opportunity to apply that technology to a kind of vehicle that people want, but it has a big downside, and that's fuel economy.
I think it's what is holding back a lot of the manufacturers, because to have all the battery packs stored in the car to store the energy to use so you can run the vehicle under electric-only power requires a lot of room. Batteries are heavy, and I think that's the challenge that Chevrolet went through, for example, with its Chevrolet Tahoe hybrid SUV. It's a big, big truck, but they had to do everything they could to try to trim pounds off the vehicle because you're adding a lot of weight with the battery packs. And while the fuel economy in our tested hybrid Chevy hybrid SUV, I believe it went from, say, 15 to about 18, or 19, actually. It went from 14 to 19. So that was a decent bump up in fuel economy, but the vehicle was heavier than the standard one, and I think that is one of the every time you're talking about fuel economy, the biggest battle you have is with weight.
Uh-huh.
You have to try to make things as light as possible.
All right. Next caller is Champagne Line 1. Hello.
Good morning. I was going to add to David's comment regarding Prius technology and that being unknown. Prius has been around and sold in Japan since 1997. So by now, this technology, which went to the generation 1, 2, and 3 now, is almost 13 years old. So the technology is not really that new. And the Ford Escape hybrid uses a very similar technology. So this has been around for a long time.
Sure.
As far as the batteries goes, as a shop, you know, we especially do auto electric work in contact with my friends all over the country, the rate of failure on the high-voltage battery is extremely rare, and Toyota recently had a big price reduction on the battery packs on Generation 2 Prius, that means between 2004 and 2009 model. And my colleagues all over the country, they have not even replaced any. Amount of them comes under, if it fails, it still falls under the warranty and is very rare to see a bad battery pack. This vehicle has been used as taxi cab in San Francisco and Vancouver and as much as 300,000 miles without any battery failure.
And in New York City.
Yeah, in New York City. In fact, as a police vehicle, too, also in New York City. And the ones in California, I understand, they had to be chopped up because they do not allow a taxi cab more than 300,000 miles on the odometer to be on the road. So they had to decommission them and send them to the salvage yard. But they're doing very well in service. And as far as the vehicle, which is driven a lot, like a taxi cab, the amount of saving on the gas and all that is enormous.
Well, it certainly warms my heart to hear that people in the field are basically confirming the data that Consumer Reports has on the hybrid models, and that's good news for everybody.
Yes, indeed.
All right. Well, thank you for the call. We'll try to get at least one more. We have someone here on a cell phone, line two. Hello.
Hi, this is the opposite end, and I tuned in late, so I don't know if anybody talked about this. If you let your Prius sit for 2 weeks and you don't drive it, the regular 12-volt battery is almost always completely drained.
That is, I have heard that from many, many Prius owners, and it certainly, if you're going away on a long business trip and you've got your Prius parked at the airport and you come back and you're tired and you know how draining it is to travel,
yep.
You come back and the engine is dead, you can't even crank it over. Yep. Oh, sure. I mean, I think there's got to be a way to improve that. But you're not the first person that I've heard say that.
No, and what we did when we left the car in the garage was we bought a trickle charger.
Right.
Hooked it up to a trickle charger, and that was perfect. And if we'd had more time, we would have bought a solar trickle charger, but there wasn't enough time for that. But it was a real rude awakening coming back from vacation and hopping into the car in the garage and not having it be able to crank. And I had no idea that was going to happen. There was no warning from Prius. So I just thought I'd put that out there for other folks who are parking their car for a while.
Excellent
okay,
point.
Good.
Excellent
point. All right. Real quick, one more. Seidel, Illinois, line three. Hello.
Hello. Yes, quickie question. I have a covered trailer. I haul a sports car in. I need a vehicle to haul that in. What would be the most gas-efficient, diesel-efficient, perhaps used vehicle I can get?
Well, Consumer Reports tested heavy-duty turbo-diesel pickup trucks a couple years ago. We thought the best model was the Chevrolet Silverado with the 6.6-liter diesel engine. This got about 13 miles per gallon overall in our testing, which is very competitive for its class. However, certainly, as you know, hauling a race car behind any vehicle, you're not going to get great fuel economy from almost anything. The downside is that it has below-average reliability, so we can't recommend any of the heavy-duty turbo diesel pickup trucks at this moment. But the GM products did best in our test.
I see. I was hearing that the 1999 through 2003, oh, gosh, I forgot the I don't know if it was a Ram, it was a diesel. They got like 18 miles a gallon, but they aren't around anymore because they went to a larger engine or something. Does that sound familiar?
I have no data on that to back up what you're saying. I'm not saying it's not correct, but we haven't tested. We didn't test turbo diesel heavy duty pickups until the current generation model, so I can't confirm or deny the past fuel economy test that you just mentioned.
We're going to have to stop. We're here at the end of the time. You want to find out more about cars and think about buying one as part of your research, you might want to look at Consumer Reports. Our guest, Mike Quincy, is auto content specialist with Consumer Reports. Mike, thanks very much.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Support for the broadcast today comes from Provena Covenant Medical Center, now an in-network provider for all Health Alliance plans, including HMO, PPO, Point of Service, and Medicare Advantage HMO and PPO. Provena encourages you to join them in supporting WILO. WILO is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. That's it for us on Focus. Up next, the Afternoon Magazine. The host, Celeste Quinn.
Thank you very much, David. This is WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD2 and HD3 Urbana. In Kansas City, December wheat is trading at 541, up 5 3/4. March, 557 1/4, up 5 3/4. Chicago, December, 536, up 4 1/4. March, 556 1/2, up 4 1/2. December corn, 392 1/4, down 1 3/4. March, 407 1/4, down 2. May, 417, down 2 1/4. July, 424 3/4, down 3. November beans, 979 3/4, up 16. January, 987.